Welcome to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, Jared Serbu.
5 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Glad you're with us. I'm Jared Serbu, and this is On DoD. Today we're going to talk Air Force and, more specifically, energy. The Air Force is the largest consumer of energy in the federal government, and like the rest of the military services and certainly civilian agencies too, it's working to figure out ways to use that energy more efficiently, more effectively. Our guest today to talk about everything that means is Dr. Kevin Geis. He's the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Energy. And Dr. Geis, thanks for being with us. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Jared. Thanks for having me.
And your office, as I understand it, is relatively new in the Air Force, right? And even at the Office of the Secretary of Defense level, too, there have been some new positions created relating to energy within the past couple of years. The department put out its first plan for operational energy this summer. Is it fair to say the military as an institution is thinking about energy differently and more deeply than it has in the past?
Jared, the military has appreciated the role that energy plays for a long time. And I think what you're seeing is a growth in emphasis on how we manage our investments to optimize how we use energy to become more efficient, more effective. But at the end of the day, energy is an enabler to the mission. And for the Air Force, the mission is to fly, fight, and win in airspace and cyberspace and to provide those forces at the capabilities that are required. And energy is that an underlying enabler that runs through absolutely everything that we do, not only in the Air Force, but all the services.
So talk me through what you see as the roles and responsibilities of your office. I mean, energy is such an all-encompassing topic in every nook and cranny of what you do.
Right.
It seems like you kind of have to be a jack of all trades to do this effectively, to look across everything the Air Force does and focus on energy.
That's a great point, Jared. Energy is a very interdisciplinary topic. When you're talking about energy at installations, there are real estate issues, environmental issues, utility pricing issues, infrastructure issues. So it's not just about let's put in a solar panel and let's go find the best solar technology. You have to find the right place on the installation. You have to ensure, getting back to mission, that renewable energy project doesn't adversely impact the mission. You know, say wind towers that might impact radar for some reason, or solar panels or things like that, which could cause glare or other things to impact the actual mission. So it is very interdisciplinary, and you have to have a number of stakeholders there when you're trying to do those projects. Likewise, when you're looking at, say, aviation and how we use fuel in aviation, one piece of it may be developing a new engine technology, but then you also have to have the people there that do the systems engineering and understand how that engine impacts the overall airplane or weapon system, and perhaps an increase in thrust. Could that have some impact on things that hold that engine in place, or how that engine perform, or that plane performs with a new engine? Mm-hmm. So it's not just about get the best propulsion expert there. It's looking at that overall weapon system, that whole plane, and then also how you operate that plane. Now, we talk a lot about technology efficiency, but we often assume away that the human is performing at 100% efficiency and effectiveness. And we have to understand how the changes in performance of that human and how that human utilizes that weapon system or that piece of infrastructure, how that can impact the efficiency. So we're looking at ways to change behavior, modify how we do things and policies and protocols and procedures that can, at the end of the day, reduce the amount of fuel that we need.
Mm-hmm. As you sort of alluded to, militaries have had to think about energy basically throughout the history of warfare. What does having your office here in the Pentagon do for the Air Force that allows it to think about energy more efficiently, yeah, more effectively?
So my office, Jared, I started in this job in November of 2010. So as we talk today about what we as the Air Force have accomplished in the last year, this last calendar year, my office has been around for about a year. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what we've accomplished has occurred during that time. The other services also have deputy assistant secretaries for energy. The Army has actually had that position about 2 years longer than the Air Force. The Navy's position maybe about 6 months to a year longer. So at this time, each of the services have individuals focused on energy. And for each of us, our portfolio is the entire energy space. So whether it's infrastructure, aviation, expeditionary operations, energy security, power surety. All of those arenas are part of what we do. So my office specifically, I work with the Undersecretary of the Air Force, Ms. Connaughton, and the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Installations, Energy, and Logistics, the Honorable Terry Yonkers, on this overall portfolio. I also work with the major commands. I work with the headquarters Air Force staff, the folks like the civil engineer, the folks in the operations arena, the A35, and work on those policies that will help move the Air Force forward to be more effective and efficient. Another one of the significant areas that we work on in our office is to identify new initiatives for the Air Force that should be addressed within the budgeting process, within the POM. And through that, we work across the entire Air Force. It's not something that our office, you know, we do on our own and hand the list over to the Air Force. It's something that we do in a participatory fashion with all of the major commands who are parts of our Energy Council that the Undersecretary runs that brings them all together, and we put these initiatives out on the table to identify those which we think have the most promise for the future.
Well, one good place to start in terms of specifics is probably operational energy, which I think is probably, I think you've said before, about 80% of what you use. You're the top consumer of energy in the federal government, as I said at the beginning. You're probably not going to give up that top spot anytime soon. But let's walk through some of the things you're trying to do and things you've already done to be more efficient in the way you use that operational energy. And I'm guessing the biggest chunk of that's probably going to be in the air mobility area.
Yes, Jared. About 84% of all the energy that we use is for aviation fuel. Now, some of that is within the continental United States, and a lot of that, though, is for international operations. We fly 900 mobility flights a day all around the world, and that's hauling people, that's hauling cargo, ammunition. It's hauling fuel out to the remote areas of Afghanistan and dropping fuel off for the troops that are out there, the Marines and the soldiers that are working at the forward tactical edge. So that 900 flights a day is a huge chunk of the fuel that we use. We also have a significant amount that's used by our combat air force, the F-16s, the F-15s, the A-10s, the bombers that are supporting the mission. And what we're trying to do is look across the entire enterprise for opportunities that we can save and be more effective and more efficient. But one of the reasons why I point out that 900 flights a day is that that's an ongoing requirement. Mm-hmm. You know, we will be doing those kinds of things even as we've just come out of Iraq officially, as we change our operations in Afghanistan. We're continually operating around the world, especially in the mobility side. And when there is a disaster and we're called upon for humanitarian relief, like we've had in the past in Haiti or in Japan and other areas of the world, that's part of that mission that we support. So the Air Force will always be daily undergoing a number of missions to support that mm-hmm. mobility. The kinds of things that we're looking in the aviation space, you know, starting with improvements, we're looking at new software that helps us to plan our routes better, take advantage more real time of changes in airspeed and or wind speed and direction and weather events, and make sure that our planes are flying at the most efficient altitudes and in the most efficient directions. We're also working with the State Department and working diplomatic clearances over certain countries for certain missions. So we may be prohibited from carrying a cargo plane that's hauling a certain kind of ammunition, but perhaps if we're extracting a wounded warrior or it's a medevac flight, perhaps we can get clearance to fly over a certain country that allows us a more direct route. So many different ways that we can adjust how we plan a mission and conduct an actual mission we're looking at. Some other simple things like I may have mentioned before to you about the coat cleaning, the cleaning of the engines that we're doing on our cargo aircraft, which basically gets the dirt and grime off those fins and that jet turbine and allows that thing to run more efficiently and a little bit cooler and save us some fuel. We're also looking at taking some of the excess equipment off the back of cargo airplanes that we haul around inside, perhaps extra toolboxes or coffee pots and things like that are on the plane and were part of the original requirement. But as we go back and look at what the current requirements are, you know, every pound of weight that's on an aircraft takes pounds of fuel to fly it around. Mm-hmm. So we're really looking seriously at everything that we need to provide the equipment for the mission.
We need to take a short break here, come back in just a few minutes and talk a little bit more about how the Air Force is saving energy in its Air Mobility Command. You're listening to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin.
Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Core processors, new HP ProLiant G7 servers are an ideal choice for reducing power costs and getting a jump on your cloud computing initiatives. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how the power of HP and Intel can achieve a return on investment in as little as 2 months. Talk to GovConnection and find out how together they can power your data center into the future. Call 800-800-0019 today. As the government works to address the growing wave of cyber crime, one provider is leading the fight. Verizon stands as the first and only identity provider to achieve ICAM Level 3 approval. This enables Verizon to issue strong digital identity credentials that meet strict, predefined standards to government agencies, health organizations, and businesses. It's one way Verizon is leading the fight against identity theft and fraud. To find out more, visit verizonbusiness.com/identity.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
McCarthy Services wants to provide your family with comfort at an affordable cost. Now through February 15th, buy a new air conditioner and you could receive a select free furnace. Make a smart investment for your home, family, and wallet. Financing options available with many energy efficient models. Schedule time with their expert comfort advisors today. Call 703-253-7471 or visit McCarthyHomeServices.com. Don't wait. Sale ends February 15th. Get professional service with a hometown touch from McCarthy. Restrictions apply. Ask a representative for details.
Join host Michael Keegan for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. Leaders Speak, a conversation on leadership and public service. What makes an effective leader? Why pursue a career in public service? Over a dozen past and current government executives shared their extended reflection on the next Business of Government Hour.
Moving your enterprise to the cloud doesn't mean you have to let go of IT control. With BMC's proven cloud lifecycle management from IronBow, you can visualize and manage data and applications in public, private, or hybrid clouds through a single pane of glass. It gives you the control you need to deliver peak performance for users. Find out more about BMC Cloud Lifecycle Management and the BMC Public Sector Forum at IronBow.com. Keep your IT in view and under control in the cloud.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, I'm Jared Serbu. This is On DoD, and we're at the Pentagon with Dr. Kevin Geis, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Energy. And right before we broke, Dr. Geis, we were talking about Air Mobility Command and what they've done so far, what they're still trying to do, and what you're still trying to do to reduce the amount of energy that those 900 flights every single day burn around the world. Give me some more examples of that, and maybe how much savings you've been able to come up with in the efforts that you've taken so far.
Okay, sure, Jared. I really need to give credit where credit is due, and General Johns, who is the Air Mobility Commander, has really taken the bull by the horns over the last few years and challenged his folks to come up with as many ideas and opportunities and initiatives as they can to become more efficient and reduce the amount of fuel that we have that we use for our mobility. And he actually set up a fuel efficiency office, took it out of Hyde to pull that office together and staff that up, and they've been very active over the last couple of years in providing to the Air Force a lot of the significant initiatives that we have. And just to give you an idea of the overall impact of what some of those initiatives have done, since 2006, our overall consumption of fuel has come down by about 2%. And given all of the activity that we have still had in supporting the wars and doing humanitarian and disaster relief, we've still been able to bring down our overall consumption by 2%. But I would say even more importantly is that we have become 21% more efficient for every ton of cargo that we haul per mile. So to haul one ton of cargo, 1 mile, we've decreased the energy consumption requirement by 21%. So we're still hauling a lot of stuff, still flying all those flights, as I mentioned, and at the same time we've been able to bring down the overall consumption, we've also become 21% more efficient in doing that. And some of that is due to coming up with better procedures for loading aircraft, you know, allowing points to hold cargo for up to 12 hours so that they can wait for another plane to bring more supplies so that the plane they're getting ready to send off is even filled up more with the cargo that they have. So we as civilians as well as the military have become accustomed to just-in-time logistics, and that's fine so that you're continually getting your ton of cargo, but you know what? What if can you wait 4 hours and then we can bring those 4 tons right at the same time and be perhaps more efficient? So those are the kinds of procedural things that the Air Force is looking at and how to do its business better. Because it's not all about spending billions of dollars to upgrade an aircraft engine. Some of this is just learning how to do things more effective and more efficiently.
And when we went through the efficiency initiatives with Secretary Gates last year, as I recall, the Air Mobility Command's fuel efficiency efforts were a big part of the Air Force's contribution to the overall $100 billion.
Yes, we had upwards of $700 million in efficiencies over the FYDP in the FY12.
That's real money.
And it's real money. Now we don't control the price of fuel.
Sure.
So the actual price of fuel we pay in 3 or 4 years will affect what the actual dollar savings is, but it will in the least be a cost avoidance. Because even if the price goes up, that would mean that we would be paying even more for fuel than we'll have to. But since we can't predict what the price of fuel is going to be in the future, those will be at least a cost avoidance for us in the future.
You mentioned Air Mobility Command took the bull by the horns and kind of did this on their own. That brings up the point that this really, I know one of the things that you're trying to do is spread this out culturally throughout the Air Force so that it's not the Pentagon directing, micromanaging individual efforts. It's a cultural issue that people feel the need, that feel compelled to save energy wherever they can.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would start by saying that we have indications that the culture is already changing in the direction that we like. This past year, the Air Force won 7 awards from the Department of Energy's Federal Energy Management Program for energy and water savings. And that was the most awards of any federal agency. So although I will still say we have a quite a ways to go in the Air Force and ensuring that we have the awareness and the behavior change that we need across the board, I'm very proud of what the Air Force has done in this last year. Another significant thing that we've just rolled out a energy awareness module for all airmen and put that onto the Air Force portal, and so that each of the airmen can go and look at not only what they can do in their sort of personal lives, but also how it might relate to their particular type of job that they do. We've worked very closely with the Air Education Training Command. Lieutenant General Owens down there is my partner on the Partnership and Outreach Steering Group that I lead. And what we're focused on is addressing our outreach through public affairs, our training. They are looking at all of the training courses that the Air Force has that AETC is responsible for and ensuring that energy is worked into that program specifically to how energy is used in that job series. You know, if you're an aircraft maintainer, energy means something different to you in your job than if you are a medical technician.
Sure.
So it's not just general energy awareness. I think, you know, we've done quite a bit of that, the Department of Energy, and I would say, you know, the popular press and media have done a lot for general energy awareness. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to, you know, distill it down to, okay, what does this mean to me in my job? Okay, maybe it's just turning on off my monitor at the end of the day, but if I'm in a maintenance shop, perhaps it's shutting down a piece of equipment, you know, that's not needed every single day of the week, but only turning it on the days that we actually need it. So you don't have that phantom load that's just, you know, sucking power. You know, we have also updated our Air Force policy directive as it relates to energy management and specifying the requirements that each of the major commands have in addressing energy management and requiring that every installation in the Air Force has a process and a governance for how they deal with energy on their installation.
I want to circle back to Air Mobility Command real quickly before we leave that topic. It strikes me that AMC is in effect one of the biggest airlines in the world. So I guess what I'm wondering is, how much interplay has there been between the Air Force and commercial aviation? Commercial airlines obviously have the same incentives to try to save energy that you do. Do those lessons translate between the two realms?
Good point. In any given day in the United States, about, I'd say, 90% of the jet fuel is purchased by commercial general aviation. About 10% is military aviation. So, you know, we are a big user, but we're still only about 10% of the U.S. demand on jet fuel on a daily basis. And someone told me that we're, you know, say the size of a mid-size airline, and I don't know what that would be, but we're not a huge one, we're not a tiny one, we're kind of there in the middle. So your point is well taken, and I would say that we have tried to leverage as much as possible lessons learned from the commercial industry. First of all, I'll say that we have a number of our pilots in the Reserve and National Guard who are commercial airline pilots. And one of the things that we've been doing in my office is I set up an energy analysis task force that is primarily composed of Reserve and Air Guard personnel to focus on how we can improve and become more effective in our operations, specifically as it relates to energy. So looking at different ways to do descent before we land, different ways to use ground support equipment. These are all ideas that have, a number of these have come from the commercial sector. So I believe that it's a tremendous asset that we have available to us in the Air Force is to tap into that Reserve and National Guard component for the knowledge and skill that they have. And then I would also say that our fuel efficiency office, AMC's fuel efficiency office, has had extensive interactions with the commercial sector, trying to take advantage of the lessons learned and best practices that they have. We certainly have some different technology, and our airframes are different for the most part as far as the underlying systems that support them. The more modern commercial, you know, cargo style aircraft that they have, some of them already have embedded systems in them that allow them to do some management a little bit differently than we do. So we have some areas of improvement to do there, but I would say we're talking to as many folks as we can and trying to learn from others, because if you can get a business case built on a commercial practice that's current, that's a little bit easier to pull forward than something that you got a few smart guys sitting up in a room and came up with a spreadsheet and said, hey, I think this works. So what we like to do is either get those existing business cases or through my energy analysis task force, actually demonstrate these at a reserve base, prove out whether they're actually worthwhile doing, and then take them to the active Air Force and say, hey, this works at, you know, Reserve Base X. We ought to see if we can do this everywhere with our aircraft.
Another quick break here. We'll come back with Dr. Kevin Geis, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Energy. And when we come back, I want to dig a little bit more into actually trying things out in the field as opposed to just drawing up plans in the Pentagon. You're listening to On DoD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servia.
Meeting mission goals through health, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
A new survey finds many U.S. physicians don't yet see the benefits of health technology, and in that respect, they're lagging behind their counterparts in the rest of the world. The research by Accenture found 45% of U.S. doctors think healthcare IT will improve diagnostic decisions, compared with 61% across the globe, and only 45% thinks it improves their patients' health outcomes. In the rest of the world, that figure is 59%.
General Dynamics IT is meeting the challenges of a complex healthcare environment that requires far-reaching experience and full-spectrum capabilities. Government, military, and commercial health payer organizations rely on General Dynamics IT's health services, solutions, and support to tackle their toughest issues. General Dynamics IT's broad understanding of healthcare data, military health missions, fraud, waste, and abuse protection, and more ensures support and innovation tailored to your real-world needs. Today's healthcare challenges are formidable. To learn more, go to GDIT.com.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show. Tune in next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 a.m. to hear the latest from the food and wine scene. We've got celebrity chefs, sommeliers, winemakers, and more all here to tell you about the inside skinny that you won't find anywhere else. That's Foodie and the Beast this Sunday at 11.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Agencies must move three IT systems to the cloud by mid-2012. Email and workplace collaboration applications are among the most popular early choices, with a number of agencies already successfully moving to web-based email. Which agencies are leading the way? What can other federal employees learn from their experience? Tune in to Federal News Radio Tuesday, January 31st at noon to hear answers to these questions and learn how agencies are taking advantage of the cloud. January 31st, noon, on Federal News Radio, sponsored by Google.
Hey, Eagles fans, tickets to All American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the athletic ticket office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena. Catch the Eagles' next home game on Phil Bender Day, Saturday, January 21st, against Army at 2 p.m.
The Caps Kids Club, presented by Dasani, is where kids get in the game. Sign up your child for free, and you'll receive a monthly newsletter, access to interactive games, and the chance to win Caps prizes. Or pay just $15 and receive an exclusive membership gift with an Alex Ovechkin wall decal, invitations to member-only events, open skates at Kettler Capital's Iceplex, and much more. For more info and to join, visit the Fan Zone section of WashingtonCaps.com.
Here's your chance to get out for some fun. Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
Fortunately, the closest ski areas to Washington have actually been recognized by the National Ski Areas Association as having the best programs for introducing new skiers and snowboarders to those sports. So you can get a $39 Learn to Ski package Wednesdays at Whitetail, Thursdays at Ski Liberty, and Fridays at Ski Roundtop all during January. You can find out more about this on page 6 of the January Recreation News.
What about something that doesn't involve as much strength?
Well, you might want to think about the inaugural 1K beer walk at Crystal City. You start the walk through the Crystal City shops, and you can take a rest periodically with some of the 30 beers to choose from that'll appear before you before the finish line. You can find out the details in our calendar on page 30 of the January Recreation News, or, of course, as always, at recreationnews.com.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Ruben Gomez.
Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu, and this is On DOD. We're at the Pentagon with Dr. Kevin Geis, who is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Energy. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about Air Mobility Command and aviation in general and the ways the Air Force is trying to save energy just in the way it flies. You guys are looking at changing literally the way you fly, but it's not as easy as that. You can't just overnight flip a switch, change your procedures. There's a lot of steps you have to go through.
Right, Jared. That's a good point. We have a lot of ideas, both generated within our aviation community as well as folks from the commercial sector and others that we work with to try and help us come up with better ways to operate and fly our aircraft. But it's not just as simple as writing it up and sending it out to everybody and say, hey, we're doing things differently tomorrow. You have to ensure that you've addressed safety issues and then any potential impacts on airworthiness of the aircraft. Because at the end of the day, that trumps everything. And we're not going to do things that are unsafe, even if they save fuel. We're not going to do things that adversely impact the aircraft just because it saves fuel. So, the reason we fly the way we fly today is because some very smart people sat down and decided and agreed upon the policies and protocols that we have for how we fly our aircraft. So as we come forward, as the energy guys say, hey, we got a good idea, we have to go through that same process. And, and we've talked a lot about AMC, and that's part of what we're doing, but also the leadership here in the Pentagon. The A35, the operations folks here in the Pentagon are very much at the forefront in helping not only AMC, but the other parts of the Air Force, the Air Combat Command, or Education Training Command, Air Force Materiel Command, and looking at some policies that we can change as an Air Force to help us save some fuel and be more efficient. But that's a process, and it takes leadership. And the partners in the offices that I mentioned have been that leadership that have helped us move forward.
We know it takes several steps to get there, but what are some of the things you're looking at in terms of literally flying more efficiently?
Well, we are looking at how we can make sure that we're accessing the most efficient altitudes and routes for aircraft. We're looking at even how much fuel we load on a plane the night before a mission. If we get better at predicting what we're going to be doing the next day based on weather patterns, based on other range availability, that we don't have to add as much extra fuel on that aircraft as perhaps we have in what we call a standard ramp load. You just fill it up every night.
Right.
Well, if you don't need it all the next day, then maybe you end up burning more than you have to because you have to burn fuel to haul fuel or flying around to burn it off, or you end up dumping the fuel. Now, of course, there are always fact of life things happen where weather all of a sudden comes in or an aircraft that you're going to be training with doesn't show up, so you have to abort the mission. Those things happen, but that's independent of trying to do a little bit better at planning how much fuel you need the next day.
And let's talk about the fuel itself. You've started to work on biofuels, synthetic fuels. You've done some demonstration projects, I know, in certain aircraft. But I know one of the things that the Air Force doesn't want to be is a producer of fuel. You want to be a consumer of biofuels. Tell us about that philosophy and that distinction.
Well, we are the largest fuel consumer in the United States. And, it's in our interest to look at how to ensure that supply is robust and resilient. We are not in the business of producing fuel. What's in the core competency and interest of the Air Force is really understanding how a fuel impacts our engines, and meaning, does it perform the same way? Does it cause any potential adverse impacts? Do you get the same overall performance of the aircraft when you're using that fuel? So that's why we're engaged in a certification program to ensure that whatever fuel that we in the future end up buying is a drop-in replacement for the current fuel that we have. All of our engines have been basically built around the fuels that we burn in them. So if there's a proposition to go change that fuel, there is certainly a chance that could impact the way that engine performs. And our goal is not to have to re-engine an aircraft just because somebody came up with a new fuel.
Right.
If we can help ensure that the industry is producing fuels that will be that drop-in replacement, then that's put us in the right position. So, our strategy has not been to go out and be in the business of production, in the business of designing the new fuel. That's industry's side of the equation. They will bring it to us, and then we will look at it and say, okay, this looks like it's going to work, this doesn't. And then those that are the most promising, like the oil and lipid-based or fat-based fuels, we call it HRJ, hydrotreated renewable jet, that those fuels are going to work. Or if it's a cellulosic-based or an alcohol-based that's turned into a jet fuel, we'll check and see if that's going to work. And those are the programs we're engaged in right now.
Do you have a sense for how far off we are from having alternative fuels be cost competitive with existing fossil fuels? Because we're definitely not there today, right?
You want to know if it's going to snow next year, too? I think it's I am not in the business of financial forecasting. I think the certainly you can see from the industry that there are still some challenges as far as getting to the volumes that would be required to meet the meet our needs as well as the others, as well as the overall industrial scale up that the folks are working on.
Sure.
But I think the under $20 price that the Navy just paid for, or had Defense Logistics Agency pay to get their recent procurement to do their demonstration this coming year, is much less than the $60 a gallon that we were looking at a few years ago when we started doing fuel certification.
I think they said they're paying half of what they paid for the same kind of product a year earlier.
Yes. So it was about $60-$65 a gallon, say 2 or 3 years ago, down in the $30 a gallon range. Now we're down to the $15 and $20. So it's still significantly more than the $4 a gallon approximate price we're paying today. But we're also not buying it for operations. We're still just buying test quantities and for certification. I don't think it takes a fuel expert to make the conclusion that we're still a little bit off.
Right.
And it's going to take industry solving the issues that are in industry's arena to get those prices down. But we still believe that having access to alternative fuel sources adds to our resiliency and our ability to operate globally.
Beyond the price issue, what are some of the other challenges for the Air Force in the transition from traditional fuels to alternative fuels?
I would say that one of the things that we're trying to do is to minimize as many challenges as possible. And the aggressive nature of our certification program, I think, has not only been a benefit to us in the Air Force, but also to our partners in the Navy and to the commercial sector. It was the Air Force that really started pushing this heavily a few years ago. Now we work with the commercial sector, the Commercial Aviation Alternative Fuels Initiative, CAFI, and the Air Transport Association and others in the commercial sector. But the actual certification work that we in the Air Force have done has been foundational not only for us in the DOD, but also for the commercial sector. The fact that the ASTM organization, that International Standards mm-hmm. Organization, approved the biofuel this summer was based on the original work that we did in the Air Force. So we have been a leader. People ask, so why, why isn't the Air Force leading more strongly? I would say we have been the leader in not only in the DOD but in the nation for the last few years, and help the commercial sector come along, help the Navy come along, and our goal, of course, is to is to get the fuel at the end of the day for our Air Force needs. But that work that we have done has been foundational to enabling Alaska Air and the other airline this past fall to go ahead and switch over and burn that fuel, and for Lufthansa to do the 6-month trial that they've done. Without the foundational work that we've done in the Air Force, that wouldn't have been able to happen at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Each of the services, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, all seem to be doing slightly different things on the energy front. Can you talk about why that is, how much coordination there is between those services? Everybody has unique missions, unique roles, responsibilities, obviously, but how do you all work together on deciding mm-hmm. who tackles what piece of the energy puzzle?
Jared, I would say it varies depending on what the topic is. If we're talking about installations, we're very fortunate to have strong leadership in Dr. Dorothy Robine, Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, that leads the installation energy arena. And we get together, either myself and the other Deputy Assistant Secretaries or the Service Assistant Secretaries, to address the issues that are common amongst us and address some of the priorities that we have in the DOD. And then on the operational side, we have the Honorable Sharon Burke, the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Operational Energy Plans and Programs. And having that strong leadership in OSD, I think, has been very good for us to help push forward some of these initiatives, do a lot of coordination. I couldn't even rattle off to you all the working groups, steering groups, meetings that we have. I know that my colleagues, Richard Kidd and Tom Hicks and I, get together very regularly, either for breakfast or coffee or lunch, and we also meet with the OSD folks in that venue. And yes, there may be some, you know, different flavors of what we're doing in energy and the services, but if you roll up, you know, DoD-wide, mm-hmm. We're pretty much covering the spectrum. So it's not so much we're trying to distinguish ourselves from one another. It's those things that seem to fit best our mission profile. That's where we spend a lot of our time. You know, so for us, it's a lot of the fuel, and it's the aviation side of things. For the Army, they're a lot more ground-based, so they're focused on some of the forward operating base issues and operational energy issues that we're not. For the Navy, they're half land-based, half maritime. So that shapes how they come at things. So I think each of the services are hitting the right topics for their business areas, their mission sets.
Need to take one more quick break, and we will come back and want to focus on installation energy. The Air Force uses far less energy on its installations than its aircraft, obviously, but still a big chunk of energy. We'll come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbia.
You download the free application for your iPhone or iPad or Android smartphone, and then you go to their network, and then it knows all of the infrared codes for these things, and it's got the programming for 500 models. And then once you download the specific details for the model of the equipment that you have, this remote control will control everything.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Tune in Sunday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio. This show features four of the D.C. region's finest business leaders. Through each of these compelling interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, and opportunities that lie ahead. The show inspires, entertains, and is full of wisdom unheard elsewhere. Tune in Sundays at 9 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Core processors, new HP ProLiant G7 servers are an ideal choice for reducing power costs and getting a jump on your cloud computing initiatives. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how the power of HP and Intel can achieve a return on investment in as little as 2 months. Talk to GovConnection and find out how together they can power your data center into the future. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
Look at what the National Defense Authorization Act, signed last January, has required the Department of Defense to do, and that is require the department to implement software security assurance capabilities for both deployed software and that software that is being delivered. delivered.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help governments secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
Government financial managers are committed to produce timely, reliable, and useful financial information. Stay on top of issues that affect you at AGA's 10th Annual National Leadership Conference, February 16th and 18th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC features the latest tools and innovations to help agencies do their jobs more easily and more effectively. Don't miss it. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC. As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dort to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is On DOD. I'm Jared Servil, and we're at the Pentagon today with Dr. Kevin Geist, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Energy. And we spent most of the show talking about operational energy in the Air Force's airplanes, which is obviously where it uses most of it. But still, a huge amount of energy used on installations across the country, across the world. And I know it's an area you're focused on, too. You want to take us through some highlights of what you're doing to reduce your energy use on bases?
Sure. Jared, as we look at our installations, the kind of facilities that we have, the operations that we have, you know, relate to what you might have in a small town. You know, we have schools, we have dorms, we have hospitals, we have maintenance facilities, we have office buildings. And, one of the key challenges that we have comes down to doing the right thing for the right kinds of facilities that we have. But in all the investment that we've made over the last few years, we've made significant progress in reducing our overall energy intensity. And to us, that means how much energy we consume per square foot of buildings. Since we've been tracking this, we've brought down our energy intensity by almost 15% from a 2003 baseline, as we looked at the data that we got back from fiscal year 10. And that's even in the context of all the construction that we've done for the base realignment and closure, the BRAC movements that we had, with all of the movement of people, with deploying folks to the wars and folks coming back. With all that movement over the last 8 years, we've still brought down our intensity by almost 15%. So I would say that the indication is that we're making investments in the right place.
Some of the ways you're doing that is with electric vehicles, with wind projects, with solar projects. What are some of the highlights lately?
Yeah. So as we pursue renewable power, as an additional aspect of our energy program besides the efficiency, last year we either produced or procured 6% of our total energy as renewable power. And we're looking at, you know, where the right places are to pursue either wind, solar, or other kind of renewable project that's right for that particular installation. You know, when we started talking today, you talked about being a jack of all trades, and I came back and said, well, it's sort of, yes, it's an interdisciplinary thing. You know, doing an energy project, renewable energy project at an installation can become very challenging, because it's not just ensuring that it won't impact the mission, or is it the right technology, but you also have to realize the financial context of what you're doing, right? So what is that piece of land that you're going to use? Is that the appropriate place to put it? What is the real estate instrument that you'll use to get the folks on there to build that? Then what city or county are you in or near? What state is that particular installation located? Because the state will have financial incentives that may help to make or not support pursuing a renewable energy project. If you look at a place like New Jersey, one of the reasons why they have a significant amount of solar across the state is because of the state incentives, those state solar renewable energy credits that they have. So really, a lot of this comes down to a financial aspect. It has to pencil out. when you go, when the developer goes to the bank or to whomever is going to finance the project, you have to show them how this is going to bring the return to them. So, again, it gets beyond, you know, is it sunny there, is it windy there, and you get down to the real business deal aspect of making things happen.
And on electric vehicles, L.A. is a logical place to do that in a very electric vehicle-friendly state, right? Tell us what you're doing at Los Angeles Air Force Base.
Well, I'm proud to say that out at Los Angeles, we will have the first federal facility that will be completely 100% electric for its general-purpose vehicles. And, again, the elements of making that happen are working with a local utility, working with the state, getting some financial support from those organizations to deploy these vehicles out there. One of the concepts that we're working with is, as we have those electric vehicles connected and they're charged, that's a dispatchable power source that can be used for frequency regulation, on-demand power for some of the storage that's on those vehicles. So it becomes more of an asset to the grid than just a consumer of power. You know, plugging it in, charging it up, and then it goes away. Well, while it's just sitting there plugged in, there's an aspect that you can interact with the grid. So we're looking at that as a concept to bring more value to the program than just having energy or electric vehicles on that installation.
In our final minutes here, it's difficult to have any conversation about anything having to do with the Defense Department right now without talking about budget. Tell me, in your mind, how everything you're doing plays into the budget picture that we're facing right now.
Sure, Jared. When we started talking today, we talked about some of the efficiencies that we brought to the table for fiscal year 12 and working with the Air Mobility Command. One of the overarching themes of whether it's aviation or installations or expeditionary that we've been looking at is how can we be more efficient, more effective. So as we see continuing constraint on the fiscal resources in the Department of Defense, we are continuing our focus to look at ways to be more efficient in how we do our business. Some folks will say that we've hit all the low-hanging fruit, you know, changed out all the light bulbs and done simple things like that. But as I have described to you, some of these things are also policies and procedures that we change. You know, how we prepare to paint an airplane, or how we conduct testing or maintenance on an airplane. That takes those folks that are actually in that business space, the subject matter experts who know how to paint, who know how to fix an airplane, to start to look at their business and figure out how to do it better. So we will be continuing this emphasis on efficiency and effectiveness and not losing sight of the mission of the Air Force to fly, fight, and win in airspace and cyberspace, and also looking for ways to partner. You know, we have our core competencies and the things that we, the Air Force, should be doing, but we're looking at how we can partner with other services. We partnered with the Army up in Massachusetts to install 3 total windmills that support a ground environmental reclamation project. So where we can partner with other services on deploying renewable energy is an opportunity. Where we can partner with the Department of Energy, and where they have their investments in research and development, and how we can leverage those technologies where we don't necessarily have the expertise, but we can pull that technology in and deploy it on our installations.
And to that point, each of the military services are doing slightly different things, as we've talked about, but the message from each of you guys seems to be there's green benefits to what we're doing, but we're not doing it to be green. You kind of alluded to that a second ago. What are your main motivators? What's your elevator speech for why this is important if it's not to be green?
Well, the main speech to the Air Force is the mission. And if we can reduce the amount of fuel it takes to conduct our mobility operations, we'll still complete the mission, but also have money available that we didn't spend on additional fuel that we can apply in other areas. It's assuring the supply of that energy and fuel. It's increasing our resiliency. It's helping our department be more robust. So it can enhance our ability to get the job done. So the less we're relying on something that's a constraint, the more flexible and resilient that we can be.
Excellent. Dr. Geis, you've covered a lot of ground today and really helped us understand everything the Air Force is doing to become more energy efficient, and we really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Jared.